The Bushmen race have been enrolled under the banner of Baha'u'llah. They are a much persecuted and distinctive group in Africa. The Dayaks are now enrolled in large numbers in the faith. The Eskimos are represented in the faith, and very active Baha'is, incidentally. We have Gypsy Baha'is now. We have Hamitic Baha'is, too many tribes to mention here, a great many of them from Africa present in this room on this occasion. We have Khmer Baha'is from Cambodia, an ancient race of that part of the world. We now have a Lap Baha'i. We have Malagasy Baha'is and Maori Baha'is and Mentawayan Baha'is and Navajo Baha'is. I understand one is present in this room. And Pygmy Baha'is and Semang, the Malayan Aborigine race, is also represented now in the Baha'i faith. And of course, you know, we have Zulu Baha'is. The minority groups with which contact has been established, which was a work also cherished by Shoghi Effendi, from 15 has now risen to 21. You remember that the Guardian used to often mention the tribes of Africa in the messages he sent out to the Baha'i world. At the beginning of the Crusade, there were 12 tribes. Now there are 349 tribes. That is the ones we have the names of. It's quite possible that many of these statistics should be adjusted upward because we have not received the last possible word on the subject. We have, of the Indians of the American continent, 83 different tribes enrolled under the faith, enrolled in the faith. We have of the Asiatic district, in other words, Southeast Asia, Northeast Asia, in the Pacific Ocean area, we have over 87 races and tribes represented in the faith. You know, at the beginning of the Crusade, we had 8 national headquarters, which belonged to 8 of the then existing 12 national assemblies. Every single NSA in the world now has its national headquarters of its own. It also has its national endowments. And in spite of the fact that not all of them have been able to be incorporated nationally, the roll call is very, very high. We had 9 national incorporations at the beginning of the Crusade, and now we have 41. Obviously, in Islamic countries and countries where the Baha'is are persecuted, they cannot secure a national incorporation. We had 22 places in the world, states and provinces and so on, where Baha'i marriage certificates were recognized in 1953. Now we have 61. We had 14 places where holy days were recognized. Now we have 61. We had one publishing trust, of which Shoghi Effendi was very proud, and was a publishing trust of the British National Assembly, and that existed already in 53. Now we have 8 in different continents of the globe. We had 2 Baha'i temples, one in Ashgabat, which unfortunately had been confiscated, and the Mother Temple of the West in Wilmette, Illinois. And now we have 5 temples, the 2 original ones, and of course the one in Kampala, the one in Sydney, and the one in Germany, which is almost entirely finished inside as well as out. There is something that was not listed by Shoghi Effendi at the beginning of the Crusade, and that was schools and institutes, but he used to make announcements about it in his Rizwan messages. I don't think there can have been more than 2 or 3 throughout the Baha'i world in 1953. Now there are 27. These are concrete things. These are not little classes of Baha'i children. These are institutes and regular schools owned and run by the Baha'is. And the most extraordinary victory, perhaps, of all is the increase in centers throughout the Baha'i world. I could not find any place where Shoghi Effendi said exactly how many centers there were in 1953. But supposing we say there were 2,000. I know shortly after the Crusade began, he turned to someone once in Haifa at the dinner table and said, "Are you ready to travel to 2,000 centers throughout the world to meet the Baha'is?" Now there are over 13,000 places in the world where Baha'is reside. This is a tremendous victory. This is a victory that we lay at the feet of Shoghi Effendi with the utmost humility. The people that are entering the faith today are coming in troops, as Abdu'l-Bahá said that they would, and as was the ardent desire of Shoghi Effendi. You remember he told us that we should intensify the teaching work during the latter half of the crusade, and we have done so. And we find extraordinary progress being made in some countries. India, as you know, has over 90,000 believers. I think there are now in Africa over 60,000, am I right? Over 60,000. I understand in Southeast Asia there are over 28,000. And somebody said in other areas that there are, I don't know, 10,000, 8,000 in different places. I haven't got the statistics with me, but they will be undoubtedly published in the near future. So that everywhere we look, we see the fulfillment of the Guardian's hopes. We won his crusade, and we have been infinitely, infinitely blessed in the doing of it. Now, what are we going to do for Shoghi Effendi during the next 5 or 10 years? It's no time to take a vacation. When you are feeling happiest, when you are tired and blissful, you go home and you have some form of refreshment and you have a good night's sleep, and then you get up the next morning and start all over again. And that is what all of us must do. We can't slacken the pace, particularly at this moment when we have elected the crowning institution of the Baha'i world. It must have strong pillars underneath it. The pillars must rest on strong assemblies. The assemblies must be composed of enlightened, strong, and enthusiastic believers. We must create new assemblies throughout the world. And all of this depends on the spirit of the Baha'is. Their willingness to serve, their eagerness to serve, above all, their faith in Baha'u'llah. He has promised that he will always help those who arise to serve him. And I am sure that the believers in this room, and the believers all over the world, are going to face the future now with a fresh determination to win even more marvelous victories than have been won in the past. This is the way we show our love for Baha'u'llah, our love for Abdu'l-Bahá, and our gratitude for the bounty of the divine plan, and our love for our guardian who wore himself out and burned himself up in leading the way and showing us how we could go forward and what we must do. And I'm sure that every Baha'i is going to do his utmost in the years to come.
Our next speaker, our beloved Baha'i brother, who does not need to be introduced, a member of the Universal House of Justice, that supreme body that we all are obedient to their decision, our dear Ernest Gibson. He'll speak of the leading incidents in the life of Baha'u'llah, and will endeavor to bring the person of the supreme manifestation of God close to us. The Blessed Beauty Baha'u'llah.
O Ahmed, forget not my bounties while I am absent. Remember my days during thy days. O beloved friends, you are so beautiful, today. For this is the day to radiate the beauty of the Spirit. This is that great day for which we have long awaited. And it is the remembrance of the days of Baha'u'llah, the remembrance of his life and of his teachings that has given us this great beauty, this joy, this King of festivals, to celebrate in his name the end of a century, the first century of his divine gift to the world of being. Blessed are we to have served in his vineyard, to have endeavored to live that way of life which he brought to the world, to have taught his cause, to have been inspired by his words, and to have prayed his prayers, and to have longed for his good pleasure, and to have proclaimed his name. Our thoughts during this Congress can only be of gratitude to the Almighty for our manifold blessings, all of which emanate from the cause of Baha'u'llah. Though the outside world is not yet aware of these blessings from the pen and the power of the scripture of Baha'u'llah, the Blessed Beauty, the people in every land have benefited beyond measure, beyond any measure that we can use, by his bounties. The beginnings of international understanding, undertaking the upraising of the conditions of human beings, have released to each human spirit so that that spirit may contribute its required share to the betterment and the advancement of civilization. Because of the message of Baha'u'llah, and because it gives such promises of a new age, and because the conditions of the world is at present far removed from the glories of these promises, there are many who, first hearing of the message of Baha'u'llah, have great doubts as to the possibility of the achievement of the goals that he has set, that were set by his pen. We who are gathered here are blessed that we have seen so many of the initial changes that must take place before the fruit of his message is gathered by all men. We have seen the dignity of man, each and every individual human being, raised to a new level. In the United States of America, this very year, many people are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the emancipation of the Negro slaves. This one event, though especially close to me, for I am a descendant of these once enslaved people, is just one of the great events attendant on the coming of Baha'u'llah, the glory of God. There are recorded hundreds of other events of like significance occurring in the past century, and there are thousands of unrecorded and unrecognized ones. In the year 1912, the beloved Master brought the spirit and the teachings of the Blessed Beauty to Europe and to the United States. And it is in that very year that there was an apparent change in the operation of the American Indian Bureau, which was responsible for the indigenous people of that land. It is very apparent that after that year, there was a concentrated effort by all, in all levels of employment in this bureau, to bring the American Indian into a full participation in all of the affairs of that country. This is but another, just one other, of the evidences of the rejuvenating power of the spirit of Baha'u'llah. And when we see the changes that have occurred, when we see the upraising of the dignity of man, of all men, we must recall the words of Baha'u'llah himself. The ancient beauty hath consented to be bound with chains, that mankind may be released from its bondage, and hath accepted to be made a prisoner within the most mighty stronghold, that the whole world may attain unto true liberty. He hath drained to its dregs the cup of sorrow, that all the peoples of the earth may attain unto abiding joy and be filled with gladness. This is the mercy of your Lord, the compassionate, the most merciful. We have accepted to be abased, O believers in the unity of God, that ye may be exalted, and have suffered manifold afflictions, that ye might prosper and flourish. He who hath come to build anew the world, behold, how they who have joined the partners with God have forced him to dwell within the most desolate of cities. Now there are many other centenaries that will occur in the next century. The spirit which caused the initial great act that will be the cause of these celebrations 100 years from now for each one of them is the message of Baha'u'llah, delivered during this same period 100 years ago. A few of these anniversaries, a few of these centenaries are: soon we will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the telephone, of radio, of the American and the International Red Cross, of the establishment of the World Court at The Hague. This spirit of Baha'u'llah is in the world today. It is reported that the queen of this great country, just a few days ago, in talking to a group of Girl Scouts, I'm not certain that that's the proper term in this land, but a group of girls who are interested in the betterment of themselves and of other peoples, made this statement at a public ceremony at Windsor. And this is not an exact quote. She said that it is important today that you, and she was talking to young people, must review the values by which we live today. And it is of great importance that we concentrate on developing a religious attitude in our daily living. The spirit of Baha'u'llah is in the world so active that there are so many affected by it that all we have to do is to be present and we can see it. There are so many in every land who are longing to know the reason for the feelings that they have. It is our great honor and privilege to announce to them the glad tidings. The glad tidings that the promised one has come.